a story from Luke as recorded in the Message. One day, large groups of people were walking with him, and Jesus turned and told them, "Anyone who comes to me and refuses to let go of father, mother, spouse, children, sister, brother, or even oneself can't be my disciple. Anyone who won't shoulder his own cross and follow behind me can't be my disciple. Is there anyone among you who, planning to build a new house, doesn't first sit down and figure out the cost so you know you'll have enough to complete it? If you only get the foundation laid and you run out of money, you'll look pretty foolish. And everybody who passes by will poke fun. He started something and he can't finish it." Or consider a king going into battle against another king. Wouldn't he first decide whether it's possible with his 10,000 troops to face the other king with his 20,000 troops? And if he decides that he can't, wouldn't he send an emissary to try to work out a truce? Simply put, if you can't take what's dearest to you, whether plans or people, and kiss it goodbye, you can't be my disciple.
I don't know if I wish I had been there. For me, those words hang in the air. It's your choice, Christy. Simply put, if you're not willing to take what is dearest to you, whether plans or people, and kiss it goodbye, you can't be my disciple. It's so demanding. When Susanna Metz of Suwanee, Tennessee began her sermon on this text, she used a familiar Southern phrase, saying, "That preacher's just gone from preaching to meddling." Jesus' demanding words about discipleship seem so severe for both his original listeners and the modern ones. She imagines followers thinking, "I liked him a lot better when he was just preaching about love." Well, Jesus' message is radical for its demand that disciples change their lives to put what they say they believe about God before any of their own comforts. It's a jolt to us. Yet in the very next chapter, all the tax collectors and sinners were coming to listen to him. It suggests that those demands didn't scare off those common people of Jesus' day. Kayla McClurg noted that it appeared that wherever Jesus went, large numbers of people followed him. And you have to wonder, were they drawn by the charisma of his personality, the hope of God's blessing and healing, or perhaps a desire for an adventure in their otherwise bleak lives? They were obviously attracted to this Jesus, and they and we are asked to make choices, sacrifices. I don't know what it felt like back then, but I do know how challenging it is for us to talk about that with one another here in Huntingdon. And I think it's because we're probably afraid. We're afraid if we give up our power and our choices, we end up losing who we are. We've come to think of sacrifice as a bad thing. But as David Lowe points out, it's much more complex than that. We've actually been trained to admire those who make sacrifices. You know, like the Olympic athletes, firefighters, teachers who give tirelessly of themselves. But we've also been induced to think that there's no reason that we ourselves should have to sacrifice in this instant access gratification kind of world. And yet, every one of you makes sacrifices. Parents give their children a good life. Some even work extra jobs to see that children can participate in extracurricular events, or perhaps have a phone or internet in your home. Some save for more education. Innumerable persons seek to finish their schooling or to accomplish something in their career. And many life choices and the freedom to get married or start a family require sacrifices. Taking care of a loved one requires sacrifice. And there are all kinds of discretionary purchases, like a down payment for a house, that cannot happen without sacrifice. And not only do we make sacrifices, but often we do so with a sense of joy. But that doesn't mean that those sacrifices or choices are necessarily easy or fun to make, or even comfortable. We are very aware that some of the choices lead to greater life, and some don't. Some choices or sacrifices lead to this greater sense of purpose and joy, where other choices lead to less life, sometimes even to death. During much of my time away in August, I felt even more drawn to continually observe the choices that people make. Perhaps when we're further away from our home, we have the freedom to look around more, to take in what's around us. Being in airports, I'm always fascinated to see all those people scurrying from place to place, seeking to be sure that they've arrived at the correct gate, and sometime nervously waiting what's next. We know so little about one another, but sometimes the important relationships are obvious. At gate 19B in Honolulu, I was privy to see a goodbye that tugged at my heart. In these days, rarely does one see a loved one's departure right at the gate. However, under whatever special circumstances, there appeared to be this family, the mother and two young daughters, probably ages 7 and 9. And they were crying and hugging what seemed to be the father. Obviously, the three of them were leaving their loved one. And as the mother and these two young girls passed their tickets over the scanner, they kept turning to make eye contact with him. But then it was necessary for them to face the other direction, walking down that tarmac and disappearing into the tunnel. They could no longer see one another. And the loved one left behind had little choice but to turn away and head back down that long hallway of the terminal. The choices made, I did not know. But it was obvious that they had been very challenging. But as I also reflected on that goodbye, there seemed to be many promises. It was evident in their eyes. It was about love and relationship, about choices to stay connected despite whatever circumstance had necessitated that parting. And that scene has continued to remind me of God's desire for us to stay in relationship. If our commitment remains firm to that potter, we will never truly sever the relationship, and our choices will be so much wider. Sometimes we get just plain confused about what is the right choice, the life-giving choice. Jesus offers a choice to be his disciples. It's about identity. It's not about a hobby or something we do to add to a resume. He's inviting us to be a full-bodied Christian faith that stands over and against all those things that are presented to us as life by our culture. Jesus invites us to the kind of abundant life that is discovered only as we give ourselves away. Again, I certainly am well aware it's not that the choices are easy. Some around us may well not understand why we would spend less on ourselves in order to give more to others, or why we're investing our time and resources on a person or effort that the culture considers a lost cause. The choices we make, the relationships we decide to pursue, the way we spend this life we've been given, may cause not just puzzlement, but dissatisfaction, even upset among those that we care deeply about. To whom do we give our life? It begins with relationship. You know, Krista Tippett interviewed Shane Claiborne to learn more about his relationships. A few of you have met Shane. He is a lanky, charismatic, dreadlock leader in Philadelphia. While a student at Eastern University outside the city, he tells about his experience. You know, he said, "I started reading this stuff that Jesus said, and I'm just like, man, does anyone really believe this anymore?" Mother Teresa was one of those people that I felt just lived so magnetically and authentically, those simple words and teaching of Jesus. So he and his friends wrote her a letter and asking for an internship in Calcutta, and they didn't hear back. I guess she got a lot of mail, he said. So he called Calcutta, and he was expecting a polite, "Missionaries of Charity, how can I help you?" But he hears this raspy old voice saying, "Hello?" And he starts talking fast because it's expensive, he says. And she says, "Yeah, come on out." And he said, they learned so much. They had been sucked up in this real movement of social justice, going out and getting arrested even and protesting everything was wrong. They knew that what they were against. He said, "We just didn't know what we were for." And in that leper colony in Calcutta, he learned from a group of people who had been basically forced by their society to create a new society in the shell of the old one. It was this vision. Let's build something new together. Shane and his friends returned and came back to Philly to found a community that is there today called The Simple Way. It's an intentional community that over time has grown from one house to six and a multitude of projects and ministries. He said there was a group of us that ended up saying, "Let's try to do church like the old days, reading the book of Acts, that all the believers were together and shared everything in common." He said, "We had all kinds of baggage from the church, you know, recovering evangelicals and disenchanted Catholics, but we decided that we were going to stop complaining about the church that we'd experienced and try to become a church that we dreamed of." We were coming very much as learners. Our mission was just to love God, to love people, and to follow Jesus. And today, The Simple Way impacts North Philadelphia in extremely powerful ways. And it truly began, you see, with this relationship, with choosing to follow Jesus. Shane says, "Everywhere I go, I am so encouraged by the questions that people are asking. People are wanting to know how to create a better world. And they know that the world that we've been handed is so fragile. They say, we need to figure out how to live differently. How to live with imagination and some creativity and give ourselves something bigger than just our own little circle of friends. He's convinced that if the Christian church loses this generation, it will not be because we didn't entertain them, but because we didn't dare them with the truth of the world. It won't be because we'd made the gospel too hard, but because we made it too easy. Ugh. It's not just playing games with kids and not actually challenging them to think about how they live. And what he really loves about much of what's happening in the younger generation is that there's this sense that we have a lot of contradictions and we don't need to feel like we have to have it all figured out. There's something magnetic about a group of people that say, hey, we don't have it all figured out and we need each other. No, we certainly don't have it all figured out. Last week, Stone Church met before our worship service to try to determine just what kind of commitments, what choices we can make to the Huntington Community Soup Kitchen, to other ministries. Yesterday, over 40 of us, as you heard, at least 25 college students came to experience canning tomatoes in a great spirit of learning and community. And the discovery team here at Stone Church continues to meet, to share, to dig deeper into seeking to listen for God's call in our ministry here. What are the choices we need to make? I believe that like the potter, God wants to shape and form us into loving, Christ-like people. But we do often become scared. Frightened. We fear that we might give up too much of our freedoms. But Kayla McClurg again reminds me that there comes this tipping point in any relationship that determines the kind that it will be. Whether it will be a simple acquaintance or this radical commitment. Will we stay as long as we enjoy ourselves? Or will we have the courage to embrace whatever comes, to love the parts even we hate? So it is always the right time to decide. Will we be Jesus' casual friend? Or will we be closer than family, bonded more deeply than blood? We always can hang out in the crowd, listen to Jesus' teachings, applaud his healings, or we can check the depth of our own commitments. We can count the cost, open our hands and hearts, and pick up our cross. Or not. The choice is ours. And I believe it's a powerful invitation on this Labor Day weekend to push us to examine those choices. To honestly ask ourselves about our life work. To put it bluntly, just how committed are you and I to be disciples of Jesus? The choice is ours. Amen.